More of Life Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Every day of every week, almost every hour maybe, includes a decision that will have an impact on you and the people around you. So it's no wonder that we get some of those decisions wrong. But of all the wrong decisions you've made in the past year, how many of them were so wrong that they've changed the course of your life? And what if you were forced to go back and try again? Wisconsin writer Andrea Locken puts Olive, the heroine of her new novel, The Repeat Year, through just that quandary, when Olive wakes up on New Year's Day and finds she's back at the start of 2011. Andrea Locken is with us in the Lake Effect studio to share some more of the story. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Mitch. I appreciate it.
And it's great to have you here. What was your inspiration for this book? Did it start with a character or the idea of reliving a year or something else entirely?
It started off with the premise, kind of a what-if question of if somebody could relive a year in their life, would they choose to do things differently? What would that be like? I came up with this idea several years ago and kind of jotted it down in a notebook and didn't come back to it for a long time because I didn't know who was going to be this character that was going to have this opportunity to relive a year of her life. I wanted her to be an everyday heroine, somebody that people could relate to, and I also needed her to have a job that I thought really resonated. And that's how Olive Watson was born, and that's how I came up with the idea of her being an intensive care unit nurse.
There is, of course, as anyone who might glance over the jacket might think, a certain Groundhog Day element at work here, which even Olive, your protagonist, points out.
I wanted to have a little nod to Groundhog Day in the book because I love the movie. It's a hilarious movie. Bill Murray is amazing. And though it does have that similar time event of a character repeating one day, in this case, she points out, well, I wish I was only repeating a day because I don't know if I'm doing it right. I have to live a whole year and not know if I'm immediately making things better.
And there are obviously a lot of distinctions we could make between that movie and this book. But there's another one I think that's worth zeroing in on, this idea of redemption that is at the heart of both. I mean, if you don't mind the comparison, Bill Murray, as funny as he is in Groundhog Day, is not all that sympathetic a character at the start of that movie. Olive Watson is pretty likable. Did you feel a challenge in making her flawed enough to want to relive a year but still sympathetic?
It was a challenge. I think a lot of times when we see this convention of a character getting a second chance, it is an Ebenezer Scrooge or a Phil Connors from Groundhog Day, where the character is just a total jerk and there's nowhere that they can go but up. With Olive Watson, like I said, I wanted her to be relatable. And so I wanted her to be flawed so that there were things that she definitely could improve in her life, mistakes, but that it wasn't totally obvious to her where she'd gone wrong and that she had to analyze her life a little bit more and think about, wow, my actions actually hurt people when I did this, or maybe I thought that this was a good idea at the time, but then I, in hindsight, kind of have a chance to do it over.
They seem like the kind of issues that any of us could encounter over the course of any given year.
I think so. In the case of her being an intensive care nurse unit, for those people who work in the medical profession, or even people just who have interactions with other people on a daily basis in any job, you know, we all wish that we could maybe take back something that we said, or if we had known something in advance, we would have done it a little bit differently.
We should flesh out the plot a bit just to give people more of a flavor for it without giving too much away. What are the issues that Olive at least believes she has to resolve as she relives 2011?
So the huge one is probably that she breaks up with her longtime boyfriend, Phil, and she did something without giving away too much.
Right.
She did something bad, lost his trust, and their relationship is ended and she moves on. And so when she wakes up on New Year's Day, she's in bed with him. And they've been broken up for several months, but he doesn't know anything's wrong because to him, that year hasn't happened yet. And so she has a chance to make things right with him the second time around and to see if they are really meant to be. Another huge issue that she's trying to resolve is patients that she has in the ICU. And so in a few instances, she maybe has a chance to save somebody's life. Other kind of mistakes that she's trying to grapple with are the loss of her best friend, not the death, but the just kind of drifting away.
Right.
Her mother's remarriage, which was a hard thing for her to cope with. And she meets another repeater, Sherry Whitten, who has her own set of mistakes that she's trying to change as well.
Well, and Sherry Whitten, again, without wanting to give it too much away, is kind of her mentor in this whole thing.
She is. She calls her, ironically, her fairy godmother because she's a woman in her late 50s who's friends with her mother, and she's very socially awkward. She just comes out and says whatever she wants to say, regardless of anyone's feelings. And so she and Olive are kind of an unlikely pair as they kind of take this year together.
Well, and I think what all of these various areas that you've talked about have in common is that the changes are not necessarily all that clear cut. In the case of being an intensive care nurse, you know, there are life or death decisions to be made, but they're not simple decisions.
They're not. And this isn't the type of book that takes this magical premise and says she has to save somebody's life or save the president right. or stop an assassination. There's nothing that grandiose in it. It's more the little everyday decisions that we make. And so when she's given this opportunity, initially, she's not even really that happy. She's more confused and disoriented and frustrated. She wants to go back to where she left off. But as she goes through the course of the book and she gets a little bit more into the year, she realizes what an amazing opportunity and blessing it is that she gets to try to do things better.
And I wonder, I don't think it's giving too much away to say that it seems like part of what goes on in this book is how Olive's understanding of what she thinks she needs to change and what she actually needs to change evolves over the course of that year.
I think that's exactly right, is that she starts off with kind of this checklist of these are things that I need to do. And as she attempts those things and realizes that maybe they're still not any better, maybe things are getting even messier and muddier as she goes along, that she maybe had her priorities wrong that first year.
Now, if I have this right, you drafted the book while you were actually earning your MFA at Michigan, right?
Yes, that is correct.
How did the book itself evolve from 2008 to the book that is just coming out?
The very first draft of the repeat year was a hot mess. It wasn't really even making use of the premise. I didn't have much of a plan when I started off. I just kind of had fun. I dove in. I didn't look back. And that resulted in a draft that was a little bit messy, and I wasn't getting the full potential of the repeat year. So the second draft of it changed Olive's profession. I changed her family dynamics a little bit.
What was Olive originally?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say. She was a receptionist.
Oh, wow.
And clearly, I just wasn't using that very well. So the fact that she became an intensive care nurse, and I changed Phil's profession as well. He started off as a golf pro, and he became a high school science teacher. So a lot of those things changed, and I got lots of feedback in the 5 years of revision from friends and family and agents who I was submitting to at the time, so that by the time my agent finally – I found the agent
right. –
we didn't have much work to do.
You teach creative writing when you are not doing it yourself.
I do.
How do you think working on the process with young writers affects who you are as a writer?
It is so much fun teaching creative writing. My students are just – it's so inspiring to get to work with them, and it really reminds me of myself when I was a young writer at UW-Madison. It really helps to be able to use my experience with writing and revision to remember what it's like for them when they're starting out. They think that they're going to sit down and write a story and get it published immediately. They don't realize that you have to do so much revision. And so it helps to bring me back to that place of, actually, it's a long journey, it's a long path, but if you can keep that original creative spark of excitement that they have, it just reminds me why I do it.
Do you feel like you're trying to impose some framework on them without being inhibiting?
It is tricky teaching creative writing because one of my favorite things to tell them is you need to learn the rules so that you can break the rules. And so everything that I tell them is possibly a rule of creative writing. Don't start a scene or don't start a story with a character's alarm clock going off and them beeping is one of the things I tell them as a rule. But then if you read my book, you'll notice that the first thing that happens is she's waking up. So rules are meant to be broken in terms of creative writing. I find if I give them a framework of having a good plot, good characterization, using dialogue well, figurative language, all of that, the rest is kind of up to them.
And if you're going to break the rules, break them for the right reasons.
Exactly. You need to know why you're breaking the rules.
Is there a year in your own life that if you had to choose, you would relive?
I don't know that there is an entire year that I would want to relive, but I do think there may be a handful of days that I would like to relive and do things differently or get to spend more time with a lost loved one. I love my characters. They feel like dear friends and family to me in a lot of ways. And so my early readers, the people who had the opportunity to look at the book before it's been published, hearing them talk about them like they're real people, suddenly they're inhabiting the world and people are talking about them like I know them. It's really rewarding as a writer. I think it's probably one of the most exciting things about being published.
Andrea Locken, thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Andrea Locken's novel is called The Repeat Year, and it's just published today by Berkeley Books. Locken lives in Wauwatosa. She teaches creative writing at UW Waukesha, which will host a launch party for the book tonight. She'll also talk about the book at Boswell Book Company on May 16th. You can read a preview of The Repeat Year at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. So glad you could tune in for Lake Effect today. I'm Mitch Tyke. I do hope you can be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.